Hey, this is Chase Barber.
And I'm Jordan Willey.
We're two blue-collar boys doing some blue-collar interviews. All right, well, welcome to Blue Collar Interviews. Today we got Ray Mackin on. Ray, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do for work?
Hey, I'm Ray Mackin. I do mechanical insulating in the Vancouver area. Essentially, what mechanical insulating is I just wrap pipe and duct work with different types of insulation, depending on what's required to either keep hot things hot or cold things cold.
Very cool.
Yeah. Cool. How long have you been doing that?
About 10 years now.
Oh, wow.
Pretty awesome. Okay, now Vancouver area. I don't know about Chase so much, but I often rag on Vancouver. What's your thoughts on living there?
I live in Maple Ridge, which is way nicer than the actual, like, what I'd consider the Vancouver area, but it's all, like, the lower mainland. Once you say Vancouver, it's all the lower mainland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, once you're past Abbotsford, it's Vancouver.
That's fair. I'd agree with that. Like,
I'd go all the way to Chilliwack now, to be honest with everyone. It's everything all the way to Chilliwack is Vancouver.
See, no, Castle Fun Park is the divide. Once you hit Castle Fun Park, everything beyond that's Vancouver.
Yeah, I worked at the Molson Brewery. We did the base build there. That was an exciting...
Oh, that huge, big, new Molson plant they built in Chilliwack?
Yeah. That has a 12-inch water main, which is just an unfathomable amount of water.
Yes, that is a crazy amount of water. Like, the town in Minnedosa here where I live, I used to do waterworks. Like, we didn't use 12-inch water main. And it's just for the plant they need a 12-inch water line.
Yeah.
That's insane.
They make a lot of beer there and ciders and.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how many liters can you flow through a 12-inch line?
I have no idea, but
thousands of gallons.
Yeah, that is ridiculous. Because yeah, we use 10 to 8-inch in town here. Most of it's just 8-inch, honestly.
Wow. Okay, actually, that's a lot of beer then.
Yeah,
the back there are 80 feet tall.
Jeez, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Did you get some free beer out of it?
No, we did not. Unfortunately, I believe for legal purposes, Molson doesn't do that anymore.
That's fair.
We all were asking for it, though, but they did give us a really nice Christmas dinner and stuff like that. They're pretty good that way.
What has been your, because you travel a little bit for work, where's been the farthest job you've done?
Kipling, Saskatchewan. We built a hospital out there.
Oh, wow.
And then I did a hospital up in Haida Gwaii in Queen Charlotte City.
How was Haida Gwaii? Haida Gwaii is a little tiny island off the northwest coast.
It's one of the most beautiful, peaceful places to be. It is absolutely fantastic. The artwork up there is great. The hiking is great. The hunting is great.
Yeah, lots of deer. You're also, I should let everybody know that Ray is one of the directors and early investors of Edison Motors.
That I am, yeah.
Yeah, he's been helping us out with, he'll be helping us out with all the cab insulation and battery box heating and cooling in order to keep those lithium ion batteries warm and cold to the optimal ideal. Keep the cab warm and the batteries cool. Or the batteries warm and the cab.
Perfect. Okay, sorry to cut in quick, but I had to Google it. Your gallons per minute on a 12-inch water pipe is 4,700 gallons per minute.
What's that in like normal?
4,700 gallons is a lot of water, and I don't know what PSI that's running at. The PSI in those pipes, though, it'd be very high, I'd assume. But I'm assuming that's at 50. That'd just be like relative. But
yeah, your basic 65.
Yeah,
cap pressure. That's all they were running, and there was just regulated down to 65 PSI.
I'm just trying to visualize, like, so. You said 3,600 gallons.
4,700 gallons per minute.
So a fuel tank is like 150 gallons on a semi.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit.
And if you cranked up the PSI, we get some more.
Yeah.
Wow. So that is like flowing hundreds of semi-truck fuel tanks.
Yeah. Hundreds of them per minute. That's a lot. You can move a lot of fuel. Okay, I know now we're just off of water pipes. You ever see that video of that guy cutting that? I think it's a forced water pipe. Maybe it's a sewer drain. I'm not sure which one. Maybe it's a sewer drain. But he's cutting a pipe, and it's under crazy pressure, and he falls into it, and it sucks him up. Yeah, I don't know what that is, but that is sketchy. I freaked out at that.
I haven't seen that one. You can't forget your pee value.
That guy is dead. He is dead.
I've heard of a lot of, I've been on job sites where bad things have happened, and it's just something you don't ever want to think about.
Yeah. You never want to screw with, like, have you seen the one where the crab is walking on a water pipe?
Oh, the suction of it, like, pulls it through a little crack?
Yeah. If you don't want to see, like, a terrible one, go, like, I'd recommend the listeners go look at crab get sucked into water pipe. Like, you can see how crazy that is.
Yeah, it's not as bad as a human getting sucked into a pipe. So, water pipes, even working, like, even just with the 8 and 10 inch line, like, we're working in one hole, and, like, there's a whole excavated area. I don't know how big the hole was exactly, but it's we're 9 feet down, and the sides are sloped inward, but, like, we're pretty wide, so it's a very large hole, and a pipe came off of a T, like, it pushed it off, and that hole was filled in seconds. Like, it's just, the water's just there instantly.
Oh, yeah, a one-inch water line can flood a store really fast. It takes 15 minutes, and you got 3 inches of water.
Yeah, never mind 10-inch water pipe breaking off in the bottom of a hole.
I can only imagine 12-inch pipe. Yeah. Like, I can't even fathom that level. Like, it's like 4 liters to the gallon. That is 20,000 gallons a minute.
Liters.
Yeah, 20,000 liters
per minute. That's still insanity. Okay,
how much is a swimming pool in gallons?
Depending on the size.
I mean, yes, I guarantee a kiddie pool.
Like a kiddie pool to an Olympic pool. That's fine. You could fill an Olympic pool pretty fast, though, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Okay, we're off just on water pipes now. Ray, what else do you
do? Oh, okay, so the average carries 20,000 gallons. So that means that at this Molson Brewery, their water pipe can fill a swimming pool in a minute.
That is insanity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we just use pipe like that all over the place? Just have it in your backyard, fill in your pool. Why not?
That'd be an insane amount. Anyway.
Oh, wow. Olympic swimming pools? Hold on. That was a backyard pool. It goes up. I must have got some math wrong, but it's 2.5 million liters of water in an Olympic-sized swimming
pool.
That's
a lot of water.
That's so within like an hour, you'd fill it up. A couple hours, you'd have that thing full.
That's actually surprising how big Olympic-sized swimming pools are.
I can't believe how big an Olympic-sized... What was I Googling before? The average Walmart pool?
I don't know. It's a lake, though. Jeez. Yeah, a
12-inch water line would take about 2 hours to fill an Olympic swimming pool.
Hold up. Hold the phone. That can't be right. I'm that so confused. That seems wrong.
The average garden hose?
The Molson Brewery one could fill it in 2 hours.
That seems
right. Yeah, that seems right, because you got 4,700 gallons a minute times 60 times 2. So every 10 minutes, you're filling 47,000.
Oh, it depends on the depth of the pool, too.
That would also make sense.
Yeah, that was the largest Olympic swimming pool with a big, like, with the high diving depth so that the massive high divers can go in. So you have, like, you know, your 30-foot depth at
I'm just wondering how those fill those. I guess in the facilities, they probably have, like, a huge water line going in there, because that is ridiculous.
For the ones that I've seen, they use, I think it's about a 6-inch that goes and fills up the pool.
Just direct to? Okay, that's pretty dope still.
Well, I mean, how often do you really have to, like, but that really gives you a context that basically on an average, like, with an average size Olympic, the Molson Brewery goes through an Olympic-sized swimming pool worth of water every single hour. That's how much beer Chilliwack, BC produces.
That's a lot of water in that beer.
Well, it's 5%. I mean, there is an awful lot of water.
Just drinking water. Now I'm craving beers. Okay, Ray, sorry. Back. We've been on water for way too long.
That's a lot of my job. I
really hope that nobody was thirsty while listening to this podcast.
Someone's just like dying for some water.
Statistically speaking, somebody's like running an excavator in a quarry and like 20, 30 degree heat. And he's like, oh man, I really wish I remembered my water bottle today. I drank all my water. He's like, oh, blue collar interviews. I guess I'll listen to that.
Kill some time.
How much water is in his... Either that or there's somebody stuck in traffic that has to piss so freaking bad. We're just talking about how much water you can flow through pipes.
I'll just go run to my tap for a bit.
He's trying to get to the next truck stop.
We could talk about all the food prep places I worked at with the deep fryers and the hot oil and stuff like that.
You worked at a food prep place?
Yeah, I worked on a hot oil line. They were nice enough. They turned down the temperature for me. Mm-hmm. They turned it down to 420 degrees Fahrenheit. I can't remember what that is in Celsius. And that was the turn down. They were like, yeah, you have a week to finish. Then we're going to bump it back up to 600. So you might want to get on that.
And wait. What was this for, sorry? Like, what are you doing with them?
I don't know what they were doing with it. They were doing some sort of food prep, cooking chicken and stuff like that. The little frozen entrees you get in like the freezer aisles and stuff.
Mm-hmm. You ever dip your finger in deep frying oil by accident?
I happened to touch those pipes on accident, and in about a half a second, you get a burn worse than steam. So,
oh yeah, it's real bad. I my parents had a little food truck at one point, and I dipped my finger in the oil, and that was not that fun. I don't recommend it to anybody out there thinking about dipping their hand in deep frying oil.
Okay.
I don't think that anyone was thinking about it, but hey, if you are, don't do it. Except I did work with this one guy who was like a line cook forever, and he also had like he had deep fryers at the restaurant he was working in. And like if the like we put thing in the deep fryer, and if it was messed up, we like have tongs for it, and he would just barehand it. So like I don't think that guy's feeling in his hands anymore, but it was pretty bizarre. He would like dip his hand in there, but like he'd go in like for a quick second and like flip it over. I was like, hey, that's disgusting, man. You got to stop doing that.
Well, have you seen the ones where, like, the videos where if you coat your hand in water, it will literally act as a barrier where the guy, like, has molten lead, coats his hand in water? Like, Mythbusters did that and then stuck the hand in. So, like, you can do it if you do it right.
Well, not with oil, that would cause a pretty bad reaction, but with the molten metal, I guess. I have seen that video.
Well, and then you
nobody at home do this. Just don't do this. This is not worth it.
The problem is water is like oil and is hydrophobic. It repels water. So it wouldn't work with the water in the oil. Mm-hmm. But what happens if you use a different liquid that's also like hydrocarbon based, like oil based material? Like if you spray
oil into hot oil.
Like spray your hand in WD-40 and then stick it into the oil because the WD-40 won't react with the grease. Could you do the same thing as water into the molten lead?
Yeah, I bet you
could. Somebody try this and let us know.
Yeah, I don't think we can do
WD-40 is flammable, so you'd probably end up igniting the WD-40 with the molten lead.
Also,
not with the lead, though. We're doing oil to oil.
Water
oil
to
oil.
And oil to oil. Also, please don't actually try this and then say it didn't work, because I would feel bad.
Yeah, we can try it on our own time.
I accept no legal responsibility for your actions.
Boom, covered. Now try it. Now try away. Just kidding. Don't.
Definitely wink. Don't try it.
Wink. That's funny. Hey, with Edison. Sorry. Now we're just jumping topics again, but we got Edison director on. Edison's been up to some crazy stuff lately, and we haven't been podcasting for 2 weeks because our lives have been crazy. So you want to do some Edison updates, Chase?
Yes, Edison updates. The motors are here on Wednesday. I just received confirmation. They're sitting in Vancouver, like 3 hours away, and they will be on their way up on Wednesday.
Awesome. And the motors are like our last big thing we're waiting on, isn't it?
That's the last big thing we are waiting on. The rectifier is one of the other big ones, but we're expecting that in June.
Okay.
The motors and everything will let the truck move, and basically the rectifier converts we have 480 volt AC coming out of the generator. We need 480 volt DC into the batteries. So the rectifier is just going to switch that AC to DC and let the power go into the batteries.
Beauty.
But other than that, like basically I'm confident that works. That's a very simple part. Rectification is an easy thing to do. So essentially, yeah, that the last big parts are going to be here on Wednesday, and that'll see whether or not we can actually power this truck off of electric.
Okay, so it's go time right away.
Yeah, Wednesday is the big exciting day.
Oh, geez, that is, and, okay, pressure's on.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. They say the average install time on these kits is anywhere between 3 to 6 weeks to install the parts for the kit. Mm-hmm. And then we have to do a few things beyond it. Like we need our air brakes, air compressor, power inverter, airlines ran. So like there's some external things. So we're estimating about 2 months.
Yeah,
we're thinking mid-July to beginning of August for an estimated completion date, but at least we can, you know, get working.
Yeah, that's awesome and exciting. So
yeah,
very cool. Also, another post you sent me, the Edison go-karts, which I kind of forgot about, to be honest with you.
I mean, I feel like everybody forgot about the Edison go-karts.
Yeah. Oh, also, I have not forgotten.
On the podcast, remember that this is an insider-only thing for people on the podcast and people that have listened to Find My Snapchat on the podcast.
Yeah.
They've been following the updates. But yeah, the go-karts are pretty well ready. We're just waiting on some tires, and then they're going to ship it to us.
And then, oh, that's pretty dope that go-karts are coming. I want one real bad.
Yeah. Oh, one of the other big updates, we partnered with Fleet Break.
Oh yeah, that was another huge update. It was a big one. You should dive into that, but they're a parts company in Canada.
Yeah, so they're a parts, and actually they're a parts store that also doubles as a repair facility. So they have not only do they have the parts, but they got the mechanics too.
Okay, so something like that with the retrofit kits, if we start producing those, there's someone who'd definitely be on board for that.
Exactly, the retrofit kits and then the full semi truck. So I've been doing a lot of engineering work here on building the full semi truck, because prototype number 2 is going to be a frame up or building a brand new truck. So like I have to find everything, mm-hmm. from steering linkage to suspension gear to brake lines to air valves to electrical systems, like air intakes, everything. I need to source everything, and they, like, these guys carry basically all the parts. They're like a Lordco or a Napa for commercial vehicles out in Western Canada here.
Mm-hmm.
Very exciting. They reached out to us and they're like, hey, is there any way we can help you with some parts? And I'm like, actually, we could probably go beyond a little bit of parts. I'm like, here's the deal. Like, I'm trying to source an entire truck. And I feel like your guy at the parts counter is going to shoot themselves.
Honest,
back and forth all day long. What about this part? Okay, what about this part? What's the quote on this part? How, what's the availability? What do you have? And they're like, because you phone in and most of these people are you know, well, what's the VIN number? We're like, that doesn't exist. We're building it from scratch. And like,
what's the VIN number? 1.
What's the VIN number? 1. So yeah, there's some issues there of me not wanting to drive a parts person insane over like 3 weeks straight.
That's fair. You're thinking about their mental health, Chase. Good on you.
Right. Right. And yeah, so we got a guy that's helping us out now. He's going to swing by here in the next couple days, kind of sit down, talk, see what we need. And like, he's actually going to come out here.
Yeah. Did you play it up a little bit? Were you like, hey, look for like the 200x400 foot shop. It's got 14-foot doors. All they should have really played up the home shop.
Yes. Here it's all like a trailer.
Yeah.
Oh, shut up. But no, so yeah, the plan is, what I really told him is like, hey, we want the parts that are always in stock. You know, like the most common parts that you see on trucks. And I'm like, give me the most reliable ones. Like, you guys are the parts, you know which ones are like going back out and coming back in breaking. Like, don't give me like the crappy parts, but give me those good parts,
mm-hmm.
that are, you know, robust, but always on the shelf. Like,
the specific parts, because like right now is a great example of why people should be so concerned about that. Like, I know so many 90s trucks getting overpaid for because trucking companies are on such a shortage with their new vehicle parts that they're buying older vehicles just because the parts are around to get them going.
Oh, yep. I got a story for you on that one.
Go for it.
I bought a 2003 Ford Ranger. It came up from the States. It's a four-wheel drive model. It just had just under 100,000 kilometers. I spent just over $18,000 on that truck.
What?
I guess plus insurance came out to about $19,500 for an old three.
Yeah, that's that is pricey, my guy.
I had a friend who bought a brand new truck just passing 2021 here. They offered him $10,000 more for his truck that he got off the lot. And he's like, well, do I have a replacement truck that you guys can sell me? And they're like, no. No, we just want your truck. We'll give you 10 grand for it. He's like, well, that doesn't really help my predicament of having a vehicle.
Yeah, no, it's insane. I know one guy who pre-ordered a truck last year, a Ford Super Duty. He wanted the 350 and he got a 250. So he said, hey, like, can we swap this out? And he's like, okay, just wait another year. Like, the salesman did not give a shit that they messed up. They're like, okay, wait another year. We'll send this to someone else who will pay more for it. And he's like, what? The guy said, take it or leave it, like, rudely. And it's like, that's the position they're in right now. They can sell and sell and sell, and they don't care. But they have no inventory. Like I don't know why they're being so rude now, because they're going to want their customers in the future, the reliable ones, because they're going to be in a hiatus here for a bit. They have no vehicles to sell anymore.
Oh, man. I literally, like, I was trying to sell my Jeep because I just don't want my Jeep anymore.
I told you I wanted your Jeep, man.
Oh, wait, okay. You can buy it still.
I can't. I'm not sure if you can get it here.
What's
I'll have to drive out with the dump trailer. We'll throw her in the back.
Yeah, you can have the Jeep. Just fly out and drive it back.
Hell yeah, I'm in. Okay, sorry to cut you off.
Oh yeah. But, like, they were, like, bending over. I'm like, I wonder how much they're going to get for this Jeep. And, like, they're bending over backwards for it right now. And, like, they offered me $4,000. Like, I bought this thing in 2014. It's 8 years old. And they offered me 15, and I bought it for 19. Like, what? I drove this vehicle for 8 years, and you're telling me that, like, I'm only losing $4,000, like, $500 a year to own this Jeep?
Yeah. No, like, it's 40, insane.
That's like $40 a month to have the Jeep. I'm like, oh, that's nuts.
With the price of fuel, I've looked at getting a car, and I've three Super Duties now, but I typically only use two for work. So I was like, you know what, Jordan, let's sell a Super Duty. We'll sell the F-350, and we'll get a car. And I still have the F-250 and the F-550. So I sold the F-350. I bought it for a grand about 2 years ago and probably put $1,500 into it. And it sold for $6,500. And I feel weird about that, but I also look online and that's what they're selling for. So it's like, oh, I kind of feel like a jerk because I'm charged so much more. But that's what they're all selling for. Like, what do? Like, I feel bad, but like that's an older truck. Like, it's not a nicer vehicle. But, like, still, like, that's the price of the older ones right now. They've gone up.
Yeah, honestly, like, that's why I was like, oh, maybe I should sell this Jeep. Like, and I mean, these guys really, really wanted it. It came down to somebody somehow committed some identity fraud or something. But they're like, yeah, there's a lien on it from, like, 4 years ago. I'm like, what? I basically almost bought this thing with cash. Like, what's going on? And, like, so my name is on this loan, and they use the Jeep as collateral, but BMW financing has a lien on it. And we're like, what's that BMW? They're like, so call this person. I'm like banging my head off a wall because they're like, okay, we just need your address. Give them the address. I'm like, well, don't live there. Give them the old address. No, give them my old address. I'm like, that's the only three I've lived in the last 10 years since owning this Jeep. That's three addresses I've had.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, well, if I tell you the city, can you give me the street address? I'm like, maybe. It's a city in Alberta I've never lived in.
What?
And they're like, yeah.
So what? That sounds a little funky.
Oh, and then they're like, okay, well, what's your phone number registered on the file? Give them my phone number. And they're like, that's not the phone number registered on the bin. Oh, yeah. But so, and then, yeah, phone number that I've had this phone number since grade 9. The phone number, and they're like, well, we can't tell you the phone number. I even gave them, like, my ex-wife's phone number. I'm like, well, maybe. And they're like, no, that's not the phone number.
Mm-hmm.
And then what was the other thing? They're like, okay, well, what's your email address? And we can send you an email confirmation. And they're like, the email, like, I give my email address. And they're like, that's not it. Does it starts with, like, a G. And I'm like, well, that's not my email. So wrong address, wrong thing, wrong, like.
Yeah, that sounds like a like is there some fraud in here? I'm getting confused. Like, something sounds real messy.
100%. There seems some weird fraud from BMW or something from, like, 4 or 5 years ago. So, like, oh, okay, I got to figure out what happened here.
Yeah. Well, I hope you get that sorted out.
Yeah. I mean,
maybe I'll just come get the Jeep.
Part is like, they're like, oh yeah, we have no, like, oh, we owe nothing on the Jeep. Like, we are taking, like, no possession of the Jeep. So they won't
they recognize that they don't have a claim on the Jeep anymore, but they won't release it until they get a number. Like, so basically, like, they've, this debt or whatever got written off. Like, they have nothing from the Jeep, but they won't release it until I can prove my identity to them. And I can only prove my identity by matching the phone number, them sending a letter to the mail, or sending an email with confirmation. And none of those three things I know. So I can't send the information to confirm my identity as Chase Barber, the owner of the Jeep, because all the information on there is not my information.
Yeah. I, that registration, when you get cross province and shit like that, it's so annoying. Like, I know, like anything for Saskatchewan, if I try to register it here, sometimes it's weird. It can be a breeze. And then sometimes it's 10 times harder. Like, it makes no sense. Like, I've one trailer I bought off a guy last year, and we've been going back and forth. Like, I know the guy's from town, but like, he had it registered in Alberta. So like, we can't seem to get it registered here. Like, he had to go register it again to transfer it to me, even though he has the papers to transfer it to me from Manitoba. Like, it's such a mess.
Oh, yeah. But it's, they, we need to standardize that.
No, yeah, exactly. It's it needs to be across the board, because it's so dumb that, you know, I can't just, oh, and like, some vehicles, if I buy a truck in Saskatchewan with no TOD, they can make a TOD in Manitoba, I think. They can just, okay, what's your serial number? We'll just get you one. But if you buy a vehicle in Manitoba without a TOD, you can't do that.
What's a TOD?
Transfer of documents.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's just the registration. But it's weird. You can get one out of province and they'll let you register it. But if you get one in your own province without a previous TOD, they can't get it for you.
Weird.
Like, yeah, I don't know. Go on strike. Stop paying money to MPI.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now,
BC insurance isn't that much better, though.
No.
Chase, you lived in Alberta. Like, is it, like, did you find it better privatized?
100% ICBC is way better than Alberta private insurance. Absolutely. I would never want to go back to not having ICBC.
Yeah.
It's not so much, it's like, eh, it's kind of convenient that they do the licensing thing too. That has some pros and cons. But like, the fact is that if you have any sort of claim, you don't get dicked around nearly as much as the private insurance.
Yeah.
Like, I have had to try and place two claims on vehicles. The commercial truck, when it got smashed up, and when I let a friend borrow my car, and then they wrecked the car. Like, like, two claims, both of them got denied.
They got denied.
Yeah, so the claim, like, when the guy smashed up the truck, there was, like, a brick on the throttle, over-revved, and, like, they wouldn't cover any of, like, they're like, well, the motor could have just been wear and tear, and, like, there was sand in the rear ends and all that, and they're like, the sand in the rear ends and the motor, like, all of that could have just been wear and tear, and, like, we can't prove that it was done from the guy stealing your truck. They're like, yeah, so we'll cover the cosmetic damage, and it's like, well, it's a bed truck with steel fenders and a steel bumper. I'm like, like, the cosmetic damage I don't give a shit about. It's the fact that they toasted off a $70,000 motor that's now gone. Like, that's a little bit more. And they're like, well, the issue is like, it still runs. And they're like, what? Like, we don't cover the motor if it still runs. I'm like, yeah, but it's running, but it's got a massive knock and a shit ton of blow by. And they're like, well, that could have existed before.
Oh, that's just pain in the ass.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, like, let a friend borrow the car, and they took it to, like, a job interview. I'm like, yeah, no problem. You can borrow the car, go to the job interview. I guess they went out for, like, a couple drinks after, and, like, they were in BC, and they blew, like, a 0.05, so they got the BC warning, which isn't, like, your license remove or whatever, but... So the Alberta insurance company is like, oh, they had a little bit of alcohol, so we're just going to deny the claim completely. And it's like, what? But they're not even over the...
Wait, a claim for what? Like, they smashed it too?
Hmm?
Like, they smashed it in an accident, but they were drinking.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Ooh, that's not good. That's not good.
No, so the claim got denied on that one. So I'm like, oh, that's... Like, that's two. And I'm like, wait, but I'm not even driving the vehicle.
Yeah, did the friend cover it?
And like, 0.8, yeah. But like, that's not the point. Thing is, like, when I had a truck rolled, I let a girl borrow my truck in university. And she, like, she just wanted to try driving it, because I had it lifted, like, a 14-inch lift with, like, 42-inch mudder tires on it. And she's like, I just want to try. Can I drive it? I'm like, yeah, I guess. Like,
was this your F-650?
Yeah, no, it was a 350 I had massively lifted.
Okay, okay. Just curious, sorry.
Yeah. Were you in the passenger seat?
What's that?
Were you at least in the passenger seat when she drove it?
No. I was with my girlfriend at the time.
So wait. You had a girlfriend and you let another girl drive your truck and she smashed it up.
Yeah, I mean, this girl was relatively like, oh, yeah, she's all right. She's like, she can give it a try. Like, all right, just take her down the parking lot. She drove it less than 20 feet and managed to roll it twice.
I need to understand how this happens, but okay.
She drove and then drifted over into the oncoming lane and then drifted over into the ditch. She's like looking back and we're like, hey, what are you doing? She's like, well, what's going on? Like looking back at us and like flips it into the ditch and over.
Nice. Sounds like a fantastic time.
Yeah, but that one was with ICBC, and I'm like, here's what happened. And I'm like, oh no, like this is like a 10-year-old truck. I'm only gonna get 10 years, and I'm like, your old truck value. I'm like, hey, like, what about the value? And I had all the receipts. I'm like, here's the receipts for those mud tires. Like those are $900 a piece. And I'm like, and I had like the 10-inch lift kit and like the speaker. ICBC covered everything to the point where you're like, okay, well, I went out and like, here's the cost to reinstall the lift kit and put the tires back on your truck, and here's your stereo back in it. Like, yeah. Here's the cost of like what we found the truck worth, and here's the cost. Like, I went and called, like, the guy called like the off-road places, and he's like, okay, this is the cost to install everything back to the way it was. And like, the truck was only worth like 15 or something at the time, and like got like a nice $25,000.
Yeah, no, check. That is true. I don't love MPI all the time, but when it comes to claims, like, it's not their money, so they're not like fighting to keep it. So like, I've definitely had claims, like even my brother's last year on his deer, like he put a motor in within that year, so he got the motor paid for with the claim. Like, oh yeah, like it's the receipts within a year. Oh yeah, here's your money for the motor.
Well, and the thing I always hate is that that people don't understand, when they get to Alberta, they're like, oh, look how much cheaper. I'm saving an extra like $40 a month. My insurance is way cheaper. And then most people go like 10 years without having to claim. And after like 10 years, they'll file a claim and they're like, oh, well, we're only going to cover this, or we're only going to cover that. Or like, we found some used parts that are cheaper. And like, and they're like, oh, screw you, insurance company. I'm going to switch, instead of Intact, I'm going to switch to Progressive. And then they're like, oh, 10 years later, Progressive screws them over. And they're like, oh, no. It's like, well, like, yeah, you pay a little bit more, but you know you're getting paid out when it's public insurance.
Yeah, very true. Very true. We've gotten off topic as always. Yeah. Sorry, Ray's finally getting in. I was just going to try to bring you in.
Oh, no. I have my own feelings about ICBC and that stuff, but that's fine. There has to be a better balance. ICBC has a lot of issues. Like, if you get into an accident with another person, they really don't represent anyone but themselves at that point. Mm-hmm. And that's my main problem with ICBC, is that they're not looking after you. They're not looking after the other person. They're looking after themselves. Well, telling you that they're looking after you and telling the other person that they're looking after them.
See, but that is one thing I do like too, because if you're always something, you can always hire your own lawyer. But what I do like is that it saves a metric ton of money on lawyer costs between accidents. Because when you have like accidents in Alberta, you'll have one lawyer arguing against another insurance company lawyer. So you'll be like, oh, well, your person was at fault, so you have to pay. No, your person was at fault, so you have to pay. ICBC can literally just appoint one person and you'd be like, hey, sit there and figure out who was actually at fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess it does save a little bit of messing around. I don't know. Insurance is, I don't know if there's a good solution for it all, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Let's get back to Edison. That's the exciting thing here.
Yeah, go for
it. Edison's great. Well, I mean, we're working on the truck this week. I'm up for the week. We're plowing away. We're getting old Blue taken care of as well, so she can get back on the road.
What's wrong with old Blue?
Just an annual inspection. We had a little bit of an exhaust leak. What else did we need? The low air warning light wasn't coming on, so we got to replace the little sensor for the low air warning light. Mm-hmm. The seat had a rip in it, so we had to just fix the seat cover. What else was there on that list? I don't think it was too much. Like, there was very few things.
Yeah, very few things.
Oh, one of the low beam headlights had some condensation inside the lens. That was the other thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so funny exhaust leak story. My hydrovac truck, it's been sitting for a few months, and it had an exhaust leak. And with that hole in the exhaust, some mice decided to build a little home in there. So when I went to start it up, I couldn't start it because it couldn't get any exhaust out. So just turn it over. Finally, we seen the leak. Got it started by pulling off the pipe from the turbo. And then it would start. And I was like, okay, now I have the truck is running, but the pipe is full of a mouse nest. Like, how am I going to get that out of there? Like, I tried a small vacuum. Didn't work. I'm like, well, I can try pressure wash it. And then I'm like, wait a second. This is a hydrovac. So I fired up, got the hoses strung out, and I got some solid weeping tile, like not the corrugated stuff, like not stuff with the holes in it, but I got that. I taped it to the exhaust pipe, and I sucked out the mouse nest with the hydrovac. I thought that was pretty slick. I was like, I'm pretty happy with that. That worked out pretty good.
Yeah, that is pretty slick.
I have a big vacuum on the truck. I might as well use it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Must make cleaning the cab pretty easy, too.
Yeah, just run the back for everything. Neighbors hate me, but hey, it's fine.
Yeah, let's see. Carl, we got the other set of lights in. They got the lights secure in the front now. The headlights are secured in. Mm-hmm. We did that this morning. That was good.
We got the cross member braces made up to support the auxiliary transmission and the drive motor, hopefully. We'll find out better once it gets here. But
yeah. Are you like you're just working off the specs that they have sent to you now, or?
Basically, we're just working off some cross. We made some generic kind of. We got some generic ones that we'll fab up and weld to it. This thing is going to be just greasily just welded in.
Oh, make it like is it Big Bud? Which no, not Big Bud. That one tractor company. I can't remember what tractor company it is, but they just have a bunch of holes. So if you do want to pair it to a different motor, a different transmission, there's just a bunch of extra holes for different manufacturers. Yeah, might as well just have it ready to go. Different bolt holes.
Well, that's a way to do it, I guess.
Yeah, make it for like three different sizes. What tractor company is that? Jeez, I love that idea though. Like, hey, you want to put a different motor in here? We got the engine mounts for like three other different motors. Go for it.
Yeah, we kind of figured out how we're going to run the exhaust on Carl as well. That's going to be fun.
Oh, yeah. I forgot the truck's name is Carl. Everybody who doesn't know, the truck's name is Carl.
Yep.
Yeah, so once we got the elbows ordered in, so once that gets ordered in, we'll be able to install that.
Where is the exhaust running? Like, I guess where's... It's
getting dumped off the passenger side.
Okay.
It's going to be nice and hidden. Mm-hmm. So it's going to look pretty slick when it's all said and done, but it's going to be nice and hidden, tucked away just behind the cab.
Hidden, tucked nice away. No greasy stacks.
We actually spent a good little bit of time going back and forth, whether or not putting stacks on it.
Yeah.
We're debating this. That was a big thing is like debate the stacks. Do we just run the exhaust out? It comes out right behind the, passenger side battery box. We're like, do we just let the exhaust dump as a grass burner, or do we run a nice set of 8-inch pipes up it or 7-inch pipes up it?
That's such a two-headed thing, because the one side of things you want, hey, we're eco, we're the battery truck, like you want to see that there's no exhaust pipe, but then there's the guys who want it to still be diesel but understand that electric is superior for your drive, so they're like, oh, like I still want to hold on to that, like where's my big stack? It's like, oh, which one do you go with?
I know. Yeah, that's where I'm even personally like one-handed, like it's electric and it looks kind of super slick with that needle nose truck. Mm-hmm. With no stacks or anything, I'm like, oh, that kind of looks like it looks almost futuristic in an old way.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I'd love to see a couple big pipes. But what's the point of running those old big pipes on a generator? Because it's not like you're going to hear the old truck shifting through the gears.
Yeah.
Back in a neutral, Jake brake on, step on the throttle and you see the smoke pour out of the stack, and like the old things that you missed with the stack aren't there. It's just a generator running efficiently at peak RPM with just pure clean emissions. Like there's nothing really there that you can see from a stack.
Yeah,
that from the old benefits, like what, it's just allowed it. I don't know. So
that's the grass burner was the decision.
It's still on the fence. What we're running the piping to that point, and we'll see how it goes later.
We'll see how the day goes. I'm fine to go down if you want my vote. It's It's I see no benefit to going up, except for the fact that stacks are cool on semis.
Yeah, it's a cosmetic thing, but it's something that you have to factor in, right? This needs to have truckers approve of it.
Mm-hmm.
Trucking fans need to like it. So, everyone loves stacks, but it just comes down to, well, how often is it going to be running? Is it going to be taking too much of like the wind, depending on how it's positioned? Do you run two stacks or just one? And there's just so many things to consider. And then you got the electric end of it, where it's like, well, it's not really needed. It's not, there's no given purpose, because it's going to be running a lot less than a conventional truck. So It's trying to find this balance where it's a good argument, like back and forth, because we're both are like, we love the stack, but it's really like,
is there any point to it? And then with the truckers though, there's a few guys who, well, there's a few guys still out there, no matter what we say to them online, they're still, oh, diesel's better, blah, blah, blah. It's going to happen. So the guys who are getting the fact that it's electric is the way things are going, do you really need the big stacks up top? I don't know.
On the other hand, too, though, there's something nice to be said about if you're going to have emissions coming out of a vehicle. I'm like thinking just away from the truck. The stack was nice because it located all that soot up and away from everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, there could be something, if, like, you're parked somewhere and you're still charging your batteries and your generator's running and you're walking by the truck, people aren't, like, the fumes are up and out of where people are going to be breathing any of the exhaust fumes. So there's a benefit to the stack there.
So we've decided we're just going to have both.
Both, yeah.
A Y valve.
Yeah, well, it's like a gravel truck with the heated box where they have the selector. Yeah, we're going up or we're going down. You can choose, because we can't choose. We couldn't decide, so we just let everyone else do it. No. It'll be in the pre-order. You can decide which one you guys want.
I guess, yeah. When people spec out their retrofit kits, they can decide whether they still want their stacks or not. Or when they spec the Edison truck, they can spec it with stacks or not. We'll let the people decide what they want.
You know, there's still going to be guys getting the 13.6 high stack.
I like the 13.6 high stacks.
On like a low cab, Pete, they do like it. Sometimes it looks good. My uncle had a Western Star. Oh, he still has that. It's a Western Star show truck. And like, same thing, like you're older, so your cab's low, everything's small, but then your pipes are up to 13.6. I love it.
You know why I like having 13.6 pipes? It's like I knew I was legal height by just eyeballing it with the height of my stack. Like, oh yeah, the load's
less. That's true too.
The load is over the height of the stack. Ah, shit! I need a permit.
I've never thought about that actually. For like heavy haul, you throw a different size hole on. You never know what your arm's looking like. Oh, is it above the stack or not? Throw the loader on the little bit. Oh, it's above the stack. Ah, shit!
Exactly. It's the quick measurement stick. Let your exhaust stack be your measurement.
The only reason I would shy away from that, like if I get a tandem or anything, is in a lot of my residential side streets, they'll run the MTS wires below legal height, which I don't know why they do that. I think it's illegal, but maybe it's not. But yeah, like for a residential alleyway or anything, you can't go down them with 13.6 height. Well, not all, but just some in town here. I definitely found a few. That would suck. But then again, though, would you get in trouble for ripping down an MTS wire when it's below height? Like MTS is Manitoba Telecommunication, or whatever it is, Teleservices, yeah.
Yeah, here in BC, I know if it needs to be 15 feet. All wires have to be 15 feet above the roads.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like 17 or 18 on highways. So, like, here, if the wire is below the legal height, it's on BC Hydro.
Yeah. We went to – I worked in one reservation. I think it was in Duck Bay. And, like, all their wires, including hydro wires, were at, like, just legal height. Like 13.6-ish, and we moved a house in there, so every wire we had to lift almost every wire. Like the house, it was ridiculous. Hydro guys were going every corner, every turn. We got the hydro guys running out there with the poles. Luckily, it was a very small house, and we used drop at like the drop dollies anyway, so we're really low. But it was like, oh my gosh, this is very painful.
That sounds painful.
Well, house moving in general is painful.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sad. Do we have any other questions you have for Edison?
I'm just thinking out loud, yeah.
Because we got to get back out there here shortly. Oh, time is such at a minimum thing nowadays.
It's been pretty ridiculous couple weeks here. Like, I've had terrible weather, and then the weather got good. And then when the weather got good, it was just work, 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 go, go, go. And now it's raining, so I'm off again. But
that reminds me of yesterday. It started off snowing. Then it was sunny for, what, maybe an hour? Then it started hailing.
Yeah.
Oh, brutal. Like, yeah. Up here, like, we'll get the odd May snowfall, like, that happens. But there's still snow drifts up on the golf course that I went and looked at today. Like, large snow drifts, and the tree areas are all full of snow. And it's like, okay, I get the odd snowfall, but this is snow that's still here. Like, this is ridiculous. My spring has been pretty slow as a landscaper. It's definitely knocked me back a few weeks.
Yeah, I don't miss landscaping. I did that on the North Shore of Vancouver there, where it rains, you know, records amount every year.
That would be unfortunate, because rain days aren't when you're moving dirt around in the rain, it turns to mud pretty quick.
There's no such thing as a rain day, because you'd have like 90% of the year off.
Yeah, you
that's true.
That's the same thing in like Alberta. Like, I remember driving truck in Alberta, and they're like, oh God, it rained out. We're rained out on the job site. I don't think I've ever seen loggers say we're rained out. They're like, I never rained out. No, that doesn't exist.
Yeah, you just gotta deal with it. Oh, here. It depends on, like, I can do some jobs when it's raining, but when you're moving dirt around in the rain, like, it depends if it's light rain, whatever, but if it's hard rain, it's just muddy and swampy, and it's like, oh, there's no point to this.
Turns into soup in the wheelbarrow. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like you're accomplishing nothing, so.
Slop.
And then you get the hoe out, and you start driving that around, and the machine's not that heavy, but, like, the ground turns soft so quickly that you leave big indents in the lawn, then everything's just a mess. So, sounds like I hate landscaping, but hey, it's what I do.
It does sound like you hate landscaping.
Just constantly complain about it.
I kind of miss it some days now and again, the creativity. We had job sites with blank checks, which were fantastic to work on.
Yeah, I haven't done that yet. That would be great, though. Is it?
When you get the check and you hold it up to the sunlight and you see, like, it's $600,000, you're like, yeah, we're on a whole different level of anything here.
Yeah, well, there's some of those people out there in that area. I'm sure you could charge them whatever they want. They'd be like, oh, only $500,000? How affordable?
Absolutely, yeah. There isn't a Vancouver for those people.
Then there's customers. I've had great customers. I'm not complaining. Most of them are great. But, you know, you quote them a $12,000, $13,000 job, and you're out, like, $300 at the end of it. And they're like, hey, like, you know, you're $300 over. It's like, this was a quote. You should be very happy with this.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm still a firm believer that quote should be a fixed thing.
No, a paper handed in quote, yes. But when you're just like, hey, I think it'll cost this much, that is, I should have explained. It wasn't a quote. It was a ballpark, an estimate. It was an estimate.
Oh, estimates are different.
Yeah, because quotes and estimates are different.
Jobs where I've accepted somebody doing some work and they're like, hey, I think it's going to be around this price. I can't quote you. It's a complicated job we've never done before. I hate it when you get a very basic thing where it's like a valve set on a truck that has like a very blue book value. And you're like, oh, how much is it to like do a valve set? And like, I had one mechanic shop. I forget the name of it now. But anyways, Kenworth wanted $450 to do a valve set. And the guy I went to called him up and we're like, oh yeah, how much for the valve set? And they're like, oh, it's $300. I'm like, okay, how much is it? Like, for a quote for valve set, $300. That's what it costs. Go in there, drop the truck off, and they come back, and then they're like, yeah, that's going to be $580. And they're like, sorry, it took longer than we expected to do the valve set. And I'm like, whoa. Kenworth has a flat price of like $450. You told me a quote of $300. What's going on? They're like, yeah, extra time. It was like double the price I had to quote you. And I'm like, that should be a fixed cost. It's a flat rate of the other shop. I phoned you asking for your flat rate. I asked for your quote, not just, hey, just so you know, now that we did all the work, we're going to charge you double.
Mm-hmm. That is one thing I don't always love about certain mechanic shops, because it's like, you know, if you mess up on something, oh, now like, they just charge that time and it seems like it's not considered anymore that it should be on them if they... like say someone goes to they're doing a bolt and they're torquing way too hard, they know it's gonna snap, but they're like, ah, whatever, not my vehicle, snap it. Then they gotta deal with it. It's like, hey, you know, we could have sprayed it down with some lube, got some heat on it. Like, there was solutions, but you were like, ah, it's not my vehicle. Let's break a bolt, then spend hours fixing it, and then let's charge them time. That's an issue to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that happens a lot with a lot of shops. But I don't know. Then you're at that what do you do thing. Call buddy. Hey, buddy, come fix my vehicle. My brother's a mechanic, but he's usually pretty busy. So.
Yeah.
I can't pay him enough to come work for me. But
anyways, we better get heading here and back out to work. But it's good to finally catch up.
Holy shit. Jeez, it's been 2 weeks, so it'd be good. We'll get another one in this weekend. Try to get to some of the regular schedule.
About it. Yeah, we'll get another one
here. I don't know, Chase. This might be early to call it, but I'm thinking we're gonna have to do another summer break too, because it just gets crazy. But we podcast all year. Like, I think people can understand breaks are acceptable, but maybe not.
Well, we're still doing better than Dan Carlin with his annual podcast.
That's true. We're faster than that. And every podcast
the quality
I
is
listen
a little
to.
Different than Dan Carlin. I'll give him that. But
well, we do more research though. If you don't know who Dan Carlin is, just Google it.
Oh man, if you haven't listened to Dan Carlin on a podcast and you're into podcasts. Dan Carlin's Hardcore History. Oh my god. His Blueprint for Armageddon series, 10 out of 10.
Yeah, don't get him too excited. There's like 5 episodes.
They're good.
Oh, yeah, like Dan Carlin is something like that you want to listen to when you're like, well, I have nothing to do for the next 13 hours. I better learn every single thing I can about World War One.
Yeah. Very neat, though. Very neat. All right, you're right, though. We should
get... the Pacific, fighting the Japanese in the Pacific. It's like I said, it's like a 20-hour series. Like, there's 5 shows, but each one's, like, 5 hours long. But, like, if you're a truck driver trying to get through your day, you're like, oh, my God, all of a sudden this 10-hour day is gone, and I can't wait to go back driving tomorrow to finish part the rest of it.
Yeah, you ever take the longer route, just, you know, need to finish a book off? I definitely do that in my personal vehicle. Like, on my way coming home, listening to a book or a podcast, and you're like, let's take this turn. Go down the back roads for a bit. Anyways, let's wrap it up. Thanks for coming on, Ray.
Yeah, not a problem. Thank you guys for having me.
Awesome. Okay, talk to you guys later.
Talk to you later.
You betcha. Well, next time, let's try and aim for another podcast here towards the end of the week.
Yeah.
And I want to just do a specific Edison one with all the motors and generators to let people know how that's going. Because I think that's the interesting one that people are on the edge of their seat for.
For sure. Sounds good.
I don't.
Okay, chat with you later. Bye.